Welcome to part two of podcast number 270, the Willamette Valley Pinot Noir Auction 2018.
So we're here with David Ulbricht, and I'm going to try and say the name Schoonetal.
Very good. You did very well.
Should I admit I have a cue card in front of me?
No, you did very well. You listened well.
I like you, David. You're a good guy. So tell me a little bit about your auction lot today.
Our auction lot is a combination of taking wine from two barrels, fruit from the Meredith Mitchell Vineyard, which is in the McMinnville AVA, outside McMinnville, Oregon, of course. It's all 100% Pommard, and it came from neutral oak barrels, aged 16 months, and we went through, my daughter and I went through, and we decided we liked these two barrels, and we put them together for today's auction lot.
I like that you and your daughter did that. Is she assistant winemaker?
Yes, she is. She studied at Oregon State and graduated last spring in viticulture, enology, and chemistry. And she was able to travel around a little bit after graduation, worked a couple places, went to Spain, and then she worked up at Domaine Serene. And then she was able to be around this harvest season to help me out.
Nothing better than family winemaking.
Oh, it's beautiful. And our son came in, too. He's a very good chef, and he came in and helped us during harvest as well. So it was awesome to have the kids around.
Cool. How long have you been in business?
Since 2014.
Wow. So this is a relatively new operation for you.
This is a very new operation. First time at this event, and we're looking forward to the opportunity to be here and showcase our wines. We tried to approach the winemaking process with, you know, minimal intervention in the process at all. Native yeast, we don't have to inoculate. We don't inoculate. We watch our fermenters and along the way and pay close attention to it. And at the end, we hope that the grapes and the vineyard and everything else showcases the wine that's in the bottle.
I look forward to tasting it. What did you do before you became a winemaker?
Well, I still work. I work in the local government world, providing assistance and advisory work for local governments to help finance their projects. The background and the history, my wife's a native to McMinnville, and we moved to the area and got to know several people and helped them out. And it was just kind of something that was inside me that I wanted to make wine. And so I have a friend, Todd Hamina, who has his own winery. And I went to him and I said, I want to make wine. And so that's how it basically started. And Todd's been my mentor along the way, and he's allowed me to make a few mistakes. And I think he's learned something from me as well about the process and what I believe in. And that's how I got started.
That's a great story. Okay, now the other question.
Yes, sir.
Schoonetal. Tell me about the name.
Yes. We have the German heritage in our family. My wife's German, and she designed the label, and we felt something different about the name, and she latched on to, we live in this beautiful valley, and so she combined that with the name Schoonetal, which, you know, and we put the two words together to make it a little more unique, and so that's how we came up with the name. Actually, she did it, designed the label, and again, a family affair in this thing process, and it's beautiful, the name, and we just enjoy what we're doing.
It is. It's a very unique name. So, for our listeners, do you have a website where they can check out and find out about you?
Yeah, it would be at www.schoonetalcellars.com, and it's S-C-H-O-N-E-T-A-L, Sellars, one word, .com.
The man who knows how to market. David, this is a real pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. It was our pleasure as well.
Cool. That was great. Nice story. I'm here with Kate Ayers, and Kate is the winemaker for Penner Ash. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So tell me about your auction lot today, would you?
Our auction lot today is a combination of three of our iconic vineyards, our Estate Vineyard, the Shea Vineyard, and the Zena Crown Vineyard down in Eola Amity Hills.
When you do something like this, and I don't know how many events you've done, but do you feel a significant amount of pressure to kind of come up with that really special type of wine for auction type lot?
I think that as a winemaker, there's a few events that we're really proud to participate in, and having wine that's individualistic from our other portfolio is important for the consumer. It's a fun project for us to participate in. Lynn and I, who's the founding winemaker for Penner Ash, really enjoy putting these auction lots together.
How long have you been a winemaker for Penner Ash?
Just under 2 years.
And how long have you been a winemaker in general?
I'm on my 7th year of winemaking.
That's impressive. There's so many more women winemakers than there ever were, which has got to make you pretty proud.
Yeah, and it's a huge thing to me that I get to work with Lynn, who was a really leading female winemaker in the state of Oregon.
That's very cool. And obviously you guys have a tasting room. Is it by appointment or can anybody just come visit?
It's a walk-in.
And do you have a website for our listeners who'd like to learn about you?
We do. PennerAsch.com.
All right, Kate, thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Cheers. All right, I'm here with Doug Cohen of Prince Hill. Doug, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. This is a fabulous auction. Is this your first or have you done a few?
No, this is my first one. I've heard a lot about it, having worked in the industry for a while, but it's the first time I've made it out for it. It's fantastic.
You're the director of sales for Prince Hill?
I am, for Northwest Wine Company and Prince Hill, absolutely.
What were you before you got into the wine business?
I was a college student. It's the only thing I've ever done. Right out of school, I got into the wine business, so it's my 32nd year. I've never done anything else.
That's pretty awesome. Congratulations. You don't meet too many people that found that right away. Was that a passion for you?
Well, when I was in school, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was working in the restaurant industry, and I loved that, and I wanted to figure out a way to stay in touch with it without working nights and weekends the rest of my life, and I found it.
That's the true joy of the restaurant business, is giving your life away.
Absolutely, and so I didn't have to do that, and yet I get to stay in touch with it, and I had a passion for wine as well.
Tell me about your auction lot.
Well, it's kind of a rare thing. Prince Hill is a vineyard that Dickie Rath planted many years ago, and there was a story about some clones that a friend of his brought, cuttings from Clos de Vougeot in Burgundy. Dick took them to the university to get them tested. They got lost for about 20 years. And the professor who retired found the certification in his desk as he was cleaning things out, called Dick and said, "We've cleaned up these clones for you. Do you want to come pick them up?" So he did, planted them in 2000. It's now called Clone 95, or the Erath clone, and that's what our auction lot is made of. It's pretty rare. Since then, Dick has sold the vineyard to another concern, and so there might only be two vintages of this. We're not sure at this point. So it's a pretty rare thing from one of the legends of the Oregon wine industry, Dick Erath. And the wine was made by Dick Erath in conjunction with Laurent Montelieu, another legend in the Oregon wine business.
Well, and, you know, the story alone is so unusual to run into something like that. The only sad thing is there's no website, evidently, so people can't learn about you.
Not yet, but we're working on it, so hopefully.
I'll repeat the name, Prince Hill, and of course that is in the Willamette Valley.
Absolutely, that's us.
And I was talking to Doug Cohen. Doug, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Nice to meet you, Ray. Appreciate your time.
I'm here with Shannon Gustafson of Raptor Ridge Winery. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
So, Shannon, tell me about your auction lot.
Our auction lot today is from Meredith Mitchell Vineyard, which is in the McMinnville AVA. It's one of the last lots that comes off for us when we're picking our fruit. It has a lot of great acidity and tannin, so it's a lot that's really going to hold up for 10, 20, 30 years if you have the patience.
You should definitely have the patience if you love wine, don't you think?
You know, I tell people, if you like a wine now, drink it, because sometimes you never know. Not everybody likes aged wine, so it doesn't always suit someone.
That's true. I couldn't argue with that. Now, this is really funny. We are, of course, inside a building here. You look like you're standing on a mountaintop with your hair blowing in the wind. We're just having a very windy Oregon day, right?
We are. It's actually the one-year anniversary of a windstorm that hit last year, and we're supposed to get really high winds, and it just stopped. So there you go.
So tell me, Shannon, before you became a winemaker, what did you do for a living?
I was in high school. I decided at a young age that I was going to become a winemaker. There was a women's conference when I was 13 years old, and it was every stereotypical job you could get typecast into, with the exception of enologist. And the fact that my teacher didn't know what an enologist was made it even more appealing.
That's absolutely cool as hell, the fact that you were that young and you knew what you wanted to do. What influenced that? I mean, was it a family that drank wine, or what was it?
I march to the beat of my own drum, so I like to do what I want to do, and I don't like being told that everybody else is doing it, so therefore you should do it. So I also took French in high school, which I was told I should take Spanish because it'll be more useful, and that's just who I am.
Shannon, you're super cool. You know that? I love the fact that you're so independent. And again, joining the ranks of so many more women winemakers that are making a lot of change in this industry.
Yeah, no, I would love to influence other young women, and I think it'd be great to find other women in other industries and get together and show young women that you can do whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter.
And in the end, you're a winemaker. I mean, that's what it's all about. It has less to do with what your gender is, but this idea of, again, working in an industry that's been so dominated for so long by men. Do you belong to any kind of a women's winemaking group by chance?
Not up here. When I was down in California, we all, you know, would hang out very often and get together and talk about things. I'm rather new up to the Oregon area, but I do try to participate in young professional groups and volunteer as much as I can just to get the word out there and be a part of my community.
For our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit about you online, do you have a website?
Yes, we do. It's RaptorRidgeWinery.com.
Do you have a tasting room?
We do have a tasting room. A lot of people like to tell us they drive on 219 often on the way to Hillsboro, and they see our winery, but they don't stop in. And I'm inviting you to come on in because we've got some amazing wines. We work with some different varietals. So we work with Ochsenrot, Grüner Veltliner. We make sparkling wine. We also have Chardonnay and Tempranillo, in addition to Pinot from four different AVAs within the Willamette Valley.
Yeah, you wouldn't think about Tempranillo in the Willamette Valley. That's pretty cool. You definitely do march to your own drum.
I do. That's probably why I landed at Raptor Ridge. But our Tempranillo is actually from the Rogue Valley. So Oregon's a really great place for Tempranillo, and I think it's one thing that more people are going to start becoming attuned to, because we tasted a lot of Tempranillos blind with Spanish Tempranillos and realized, wow, these really do taste amazing, and they're great wines. Well, come on out. We're on 219.
It was nice meeting you. Thanks very much.
You too.
I'm here with Trevor Shalanda of Duck Pond Winery. How are you doing, Trevor?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. So, Trevor, tell me about your auction lot today.
Yeah, so our auction lot is actually named Velvet Fury. 2016 being such a great vintage, we went ahead and chose one of our largest lots as far as flavor profile. Big, dark, dense, chewy black fruit, really rich, silky, sexy, just a fun lot.
I'm going to say this is ironic because it sounds like you described a cab.
It's actually surprisingly big. Yesterday, I mean, people were asked if it was Syrah, and of course it's not. It really is just dark, black, sensuous, blackberry spice. It's quite a chewy lot.
Okay, this is one I'm looking forward to tasting because that's right up my alley. How long have you been winemaker for Duck Pond?
I took over the winemaking at Duck Pond in May of 2016.
So still a relatively new venture for you then.
Yes, this is the auction lot is the first vintage that I got to work on, and it's fantastic. So great vintage to come in on.
Excellent. And for our listeners, I assume you guys have a tasting room, is that right?
We do. We're right on 99W in Dundee. We're really easy to find. You'll find us right there.
Is it by appointment, or can anybody just come right in?
We're open every day, 11 to 5 most days. So.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, what is your website?
Our website is www.duckpondsellers.com.
You're right on the game. Good job.
Thank you.
Trevor, nice meeting you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here with Spencer Spetnagel.
Yes, sir.
I got it right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Of Durant Vineyards. How are you doing, Spencer?
So far, so good. Thank you.
Yeah, we haven't gone too far in the interview yet, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it sounds fair.
So you are the winemaker. How long have you been winemaker for? Well, wait a minute. We'll stop for a moment.
Actually, not yet. We're just now building out a winery. So the Durants have been growing grapes for 45 years in the Dundee Hills. And 2018 will be my first harvest and their first winery, their first harvest on site.
So this has really got to be quite a thrill for you.
Beyond my wildest dreams. I'm helping design the winery I'm going to work in. So literally... Yeah, never thought I would have this sort of chance. And to work with established vines from 73, 84, 2000 in the Dundee Hills is, I'm excited about the opportunity.
Dude, you have an amazing face. You are like glowing. You are in love.
I'm literally over the moon. This is beyond my wildest dreams of, when I started this adventure a while ago. This is... an amazing opportunity for me. So,
see, this is why I love what I do, because I get to let people see your face like that, and they're going to say, I want to drink this guy's wine.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. The Durants have been making beautiful wines for a long time, and I can't believe I landed this opportunity. So it should be quite fun for the next few decades, I hope.
Very cool. How long have you been a winemaker?
I've been in the production for about 15 years now. Ben was at King Estate most recently. My wife and I moved up from Eugene this last summer. So 15 years have been between Sonoma, Santa Cruz, New Zealand, and now Oregon for the last 6 years.
Typical life of a winemaker.
Yeah. You have to learn. I mean, the only way to learn is to see all the different growing climates and different styles and people's different takes, and just try and soak that in every year.
So, you know, I got to think that it's a, I don't know if I want to use the word gutsy, but brave to do an auction lot basically where you're at this point.
Well, so they've had a label for 10, 12 years now, but they've farmed out all the winemaking.
Okay.
So they've had very, very capable winemakers. So Isabel Dutart of DuPont, she made the base wine in 16. She's been making some of the wines for a number of years for the Durants. So I came on this last summer just in time that she and I sat down and blended the wines. And so the Durants have always done block designate, clonal designate wines, almost highlighting the farming aspect and the different aspects of their vineyard, different ages of the vines, different clones. And so the auction lot this year is actually the first blended wine ever for the Durants.
Excellent, very cool. For our listeners who'd like to learn about the winery, do you guys have a website?
We do. It's redridgefarms.com. Durant is a beautiful piece of property. Come visit. We have the only olive mill in the Pacific Northwest. We've been growing grapes for 45 years, and hopefully I can take you on a journey for the next 45. And we hopefully make some world-class wines.
Spencer, this was a real pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much.
My
good
pleasure.
Luck to you.
Thank you. I am really excited and really nervous.
Nothing to be nervous about. You're doing fine. So yesterday, one of the many events, which is part of the auction, would be going to this dinner, which was at El Culp, and we met Jerry Murray, who is the owner and winemaker of Project M here in the Willamette Valley. How are you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So tell me about your auction lot.
So the auction lot is Alea, and with Alea, what we wanted to do was we wanted to showcase the three vineyards we work with. So we source fruit from Bednarik Vineyard, an old own-rooted vine vineyard west of Gaston, Bramble Hill Vineyard and the Ribbon Ridge AVA, and Filament Vineyard, which is a field blend small vineyard in the Olayamity Hills. We wanted to create a blend that was unique for this auction lot, and that's Alea. It's about 25% new wood.
And when we talked yesterday also, you're very big into Riesling.
I'm very big into Riesling. Riesling's the white muse, Pinot Noir's the red muse.
Nice. I mean, is there something specific that attracted you to it? Because obviously, it's not the easiest sell in the world.
It's not the easiest seller in the world. I like wines of purity and precision. So for me, Riesling is the white wine that meets that criteria. Pinot Noir is the red wine that meets that criteria. So those for me are the two grapes that I have to work with. And there are other white grapes that I like to work with.
Very cool. That's a good answer. How long have you been making wine now?
2016 was my 19th vintage. So I've made wine in Germany, New Zealand, worked in California for a very well-known international French company, and several wineries here in Oregon. So I've got a long career. It was time to do it for ourselves.
Now, I'm assuming you don't have a tasting room, or do you?
Not yet. We just launched officially 2 days ago. So
that's probably a little premature there.
Yeah. By appointment, if you go to projectmwines.com, contact us. If you're coming out this way, we'd love to set up an appointment with you.
You just stole my last question, which was asking your website. So I wish you guys luck on your lot today, and it was a pleasure meeting you.
It was great to meet you. Thanks a lot.
I'm here with Shane Moore. Shane is the winemaker for Zena Crown Vineyards, right?
That's correct, yes.
I guess I should say vineyard, not vineyards.
Yeah, it's single vineyard, yeah.
That's even better when it's one vineyard, right? You got a lot less work.
It's a little bit easier, yeah.
How long have you been winemaker with Zena Crown?
Since 2013. The company I work for, Jackson Family Wines, purchased the property in 2013, and I took over winemaking then.
Well, how long have you been a winemaker?
I started making wine in 2003 in Coeur d'Alene Cellars in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I was the ripe old age of 19 years old.
Was it legal to be a winemaker at that age?
Well, it was legal to taste, I think, but not really, I guess. No, it wasn't.
Idaho. Wow, I would have never imagined. And how long ago was that?
That was 2003. So we were trucking fruit over from Washington at that time. But, because everyone trucks fruit in Washington. It's just what you do. So you truck fruit to where people live, because no one lives where the grapes are grown, more or less. But now in central Idaho, southern Idaho, there's a real wine industry now. There's 50 wineries in Idaho now, so it's kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, I got to get to Idaho. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. There's some really good winemakers there, too. So I go, my family still lives there, so I go back all the time.
Were there vineyards at the time you were there?
Yeah, there were starting to be some in central Idaho. I mean, central Idaho viticulture goes back to the 1860s. Some French people during a gold rush, actually, were planting vines way back then. There's even stories about the Rothschilds owning vineyards in central Idaho back in the before Prohibition.
Well, as we both know, all 50 states make wine now, so I guess that's not real surprising.
Yeah, no. Everyone does nowadays. So.
Maybe in the long run, Prohibition did us a favor. No, not really.
I don't think so.
Anyway, let's talk a little bit about your auction lot. Tell me about what you're pouring today.
I'm pouring Zena Crown. I'm calling it Barrel and Foot. So the primary premise behind the wine and the idea of what I did was every year I pop heads. So on the tops of the barrel, I pop the heads on about 30 barrels. That takes about 3 hours a barrel to pop the heads and then put them back on. So it's intensive in labor, and I do it all on new barrels. So you're spending a lot of capital as well. And then fill it up and then punch down by hand on those 30 barrels. So you're putting your best fruit in these because it's so much effort. And the idea behind that is you get your oak integration super early, you get some beautiful aromatics, but you can't really make a wine around it, so it's more of a blender. So whenever I can make it like a 5-case blend, I'll put that together and do it that way, because I can't do it otherwise. It's too labor intensive.
I'm really curious about Zena Crown. Where did the name come from?
So Zena Crown's down the Ulamity Hills next to Bethel Heights. Chris Dome's over the hill from us, St. Innocent's, the old St. Innocent Winery and Zenith Vineyards down below. Just over on the other side of the road is what's called the old Zena Church. And Zena's kind of a ghost town. There's not really much of it left, but Zena was a town in the late 1800s down the Ulamity. So,
do you guys have a tasting room?
We pour the wines at the Grand Moraine Winery. I'm the winemaker for Grand Moraine as well. So we pour the wines there on occasion whenever people come to call. So
you get around.
Yeah. Yeah. We make the wines at Grand Moraine as well. So that's my hangout. That's where I do it.
And for our listeners, does Zena Crown have a website?
Yeah, zenacrown.com. There's some great content on there. A pretty fantastically done video of me talking about music and wine and all those things as well. So very proud of that website.
Shane, this is a real pleasure meeting you. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ray. Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers, man. I'm here with Steve Goff of Colleen Clements Vineyards. How are you doing, Steve?
Very good, thanks.
So, Steve, you're the winemaker. How long have you been the winemaker for Colleen Clements?
I have been the winemaker for 10 years. I'm also the vineyard manager. So I joined the project back in 2008, which was their first vintage. So I'm the only winemaker to date.
That's kind of an honor to be able to say you've been with a winery that long.
It is, yes. You know, this was a from the ground up project. So this was, you know, developing vineyards, building a winery, and building the brand. So it has been a sort of an exploration and quite an endeavor, for sure. But we are now almost 60 acres planted, and at least coming to the end of that phase of the project, and been out in the market now for about 7-8 years.
Not bad. So what did you do before you became a winemaker?
I was working in book publishing. I was also tending bar in restaurants, because book publishing didn't pay very well.
Really? I would have expected the opposite.
Right. No. So originally from Philadelphia, but had relocated to the Bay Area and was working for a book publisher over in Berkeley, but started visiting Napa and Sonoma. I developed the wine bug, started to get the wine bug probably going back to my days as an undergraduate in Philadelphia, where I was working at a restaurant and then ended up managing the bar and becoming their wine buyer. And
so you just learned about it, and it was something that was kind of like, hey, this is really pretty cool.
Absolutely, yeah. No, my family's not involved in it. They don't grow too many. Well, there are some vines out in Pennsylvania, not a lot. And so was not born into it. But like I said, just like a lot of people, caught the wine bug, and one day quit my job with the publisher, went and worked harvest for somebody down in Carneros, and away I went.
You are the independent soul, sir.
I guess I am.
So tell me about your auction lot today.
Our auction lot is called the Homestead. It comes from the very bottom of our property where the original barn and homestead were sited. The barn still exists today. It's right inside our gate. The original home is no longer there. And these are the vines that are directly behind the old barn. It's a 100% Pommard selection. So it's the first and only time we have done a single block designate wine. Typically all of our wines are blends from the different blocks on the estate. But it was aged for 11 months and, you know, and handled the way we do all of our other wines. This particular block is typically a component of our Victoria blend, which is our top selection.
Well, what made you choose it in that fashion and make it 100%? I mean, was it just your nature as a winemaker? Was it sort of the way you felt it was going?
Well, I mean, obviously they're looking for something that's unique. We wanted something that was good. These are some of our strongest blocks. And so we thought that just that and being right there down at the next to the old homestead made kind of a good story. And we knew that the wine, you know, the wine is always some of our strongest stuff.
Do you guys have a tasting room?
We do.
And is that one people can wander into, or do they need to make an appointment?
No, wander in 11 to 5, 7 days a week.
And for our listeners to learn about you, what would your website be?
It is ColleenClemens.com.
Steve, this was a pleasure meeting you.
Cheers.
Cheers, thank you. I'm here with Greg Martin, and Greg is the cellar master for Chehalem Winery. How are you doing, Greg?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good. Tell me about your auction lot.
So this is a Pinot Noir. It's a Dijon Clone 115. It's from our Wind Ridge block, up on Ribbon Ridge. This lot particularly was fermented in a 4.5-ton wooden fermenter. And the vintage was gift-wrapped for us. It was really nice and warm, easy growing season. Easing fermentation season, we're pretty happy with it.
Yeah, isn't it nice when you get a vintage that makes your job easier?
That's when we have to really focus on interns.
We've interviewed all kinds of different people in the business, and believe it or not, we've only interviewed one other cellar master, so you are our second. Describe that title, because it's a pretty broad and very, very important title.
It is a broad title. The best I could explain is it's the boots on the ground. I really oversee the wines in the cellar. I care for the wines to make sure that they remain stable with their chemistry through their entire ferment, through secondary fermentation, and just through stillage. So it's a very involved job. I have to keep track of the barrels pretty closely.
Yeah, and about how many cases are you guys doing?
This year, about 20,000.
So you're keeping track of 20,000 cases of wine in barrel. That's kind of scary.
Terrifying.
You say that with such a calm face.
Yeah, well, it's the calm that gets you through.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Do you guys have a tasting room?
We do. It's on Center Street in Newbury.
So that's a walk-in tasting room, or is it by appointment?
It is walk-in. We do by appointment in the winery if you want to do kind of a barrel tour.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn about you guys online, what is your website?
ChehalemWines.com.
Before I go away here, what was the impetus behind the name?
It is, I believe it's the native tongue for Valley of Flowers. Native Kalapuya Indians, I believe.
Oh, of course. I should have known that.
Or it just means allergies, I think.
Oh, okay, that works. Greg, pleasure meeting you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm with Mike Halleck, and Mike is the owner, winemaker of Carabilla Vineyard. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you here.
It's good to meet you. Just quickly, we were talking about you're originally from Wisconsin.
Well, I was born there and then moved west at a tender age and lived being a geologist until about 20 years ago back in the Rocky Mountain area, Colorado and Wyoming. And then started thinking about wine and rocks, and pretty soon I moved further west, and my wife and I started Carabilla Vineyard, some really nice volcanic soils about 20 years ago.
You know, I think it's a logical move to go from being a geologist to wine. It makes sense because it's about the rocks and the dirt.
Well, it is, but it's about a lot of other things too. And I was a little naive when I started this, but I know a lot more now than when we planted the place 20 years ago.
So yeah, 20 years is a good long time. We're going to talk about your wine in 1 second, but where did the name Carabilla come from?
Well, it's a fairly short, easy story. My wife's name is Cara.
I get it. You're a smart man.
In some cases, yes. Other cases, I'm told not so much.
And you're a little bit of a character, too, aren't you?
Well, sometimes.
I get it. So you were telling me about your auction lot wine. There was something special about the name. Tell me about that.
Yeah, this is something we have a little fun with. Actually, the name was thought up by my cellar master. It's called Bootlicker. And everybody talks about terroir and the influence of the geology and the soil and the climate on your wine. And so our little tagline for this is Bootlicker. It's terroir so great that you'll lick it off your own boots.
That's good. I like it.
And if you've seen my boots after I've been out in the vineyard for the day, you'll think twice about that.
Yeah, that must be really good wine.
Well, it is. And it's we had a lot of fun putting it together. It's got a lot of complexity to it, but it's just also got a nice kind of juicy, yeah, I'd really love this with my T-bone on the grill tonight.
How many times have you done auction? Is this your first, or have you done a few of these?
This is the third auction. We did the very first one, which was pretty hair-raising. We took a year off because we were getting our daughter off to college, and then this is the third one, and it's really, things are really going nicely. We're getting a lot of interest in the wine. There's a lot of really fun people here. I spent about 10 years looking for a vineyard site, doing a lot of soil analysis, etc., and eventually found, after all that time, the site that is today, Caravella. It's beautiful volcanic soils, nice view of the Mount Hood, our local volcano here, and really nice style of wine comes out of those soils. So we're pretty pleased with the way the whole thing turned out.
About how many cases are you doing?
Right now we're doing about 5,000 cases, but we also sell fruit to a number of other wineries in the valley.
And do you have a website where our listeners can learn a little bit about you?
Absolutely. In fact, my wife just put up the new and improved website on Thursday. So have a look. She did a really nice job on it. It's carabellawine.com.
That was a critical part of the question.
Yes, indeed.
Mike, this is a real pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. This is an honor. I'm here with Josh Bergstrom of Bergstrom Wines. And of course, you are...
I was the chairman of the first auction. So this is now in its third year. So now I have the stress-free job of just enjoying and pouring wine for people.
Nice. But you were part of the panel discussion, which we sat in the other day.
Yes, yes. So I'm part of the original committee that came up with the idea for the auction. We work under the Willamette Valley Wineries Association. And we have a great group of community here that have really dreamed up this great idea of bringing some of the best buyers from around the world into our valley to showcase some of the best wines that we make. Real special one-off small bottlings that really highlight the vintage. I mean, there's no other opportunity to taste the vintage at an early stage like this in Oregon other than this auction.
Well, you guys should be really proud of yourselves because Oregon wine has grown wildly. And it's, I think it's one of some of the best Pinot Noir made in the country myself.
Well, thank you. And we agree. You know, the important thing about Oregon is for 50 plus years, we've had one message, which is Oregon Pinot Noir. We don't make a lot of other varietals that distract from that message. And as a community, we've worked for over 50 years to bring the level of quality, both from farming and winemaking, stewarding the land, and then marketing and sales out to the rest of the world. But we all, as a community, recognize that what is special about Oregon is our place. You know, we're at the 45th parallel. We're north. To drive to the Willamette Valley from Napa is between 12 and 14 hours in a car. Our northerly climate, you know, when we have these long, bright days, but not too hot, really cool nights, which retain acidity, old, ancient soils that are well-drained and fractured. This is the perfect formula for Pinot Noir. It's where we are that makes it special. We all acknowledge that.
So who benefits from this auction?
Well, we all benefit from this auction. It's really an auction created by the Willamette Valley Wineries Association to promote Pinot Noir and to allow us to continue to promote Pinot Noir. Our Wine Growers Association is not funded by the government. We don't have charitable contributions to us. We don't have sponsors throughout the year. We put this auction together as a fundraising mechanism. Sponsors came and joined, help us start it. And all of our members have joined to sell wine to raise proceeds to then be able to take the message of Oregon Pinot Noir out to the world. So we benefit as a Vintners Association from this auction, and then we'd like to think that the rest of the United States market and the foreign markets will benefit from us being able to finally afford to travel to their markets and promote our wines.
And this is still a relatively young market as far as wine goes, as far as the rest of the country goes.
Absolutely. We had wine in Oregon in the 1800s, and then Prohibition wiped it out. It wasn't until 1965 that Oregon wine industry started again. So yes, compared to Napa and definitely the old world, we are a young market. But if you look at where Oregon's come in 50-some-odd years, that really is a tribute to our community, to us working together to really raise the bar.
How long have you been a winemaker?
So I'm 43 years old. I've been making wine for 22 years. I was very fortunate that I started making wine in a period of America where it was no longer a rich man or rich woman's hobby. This wineries used to be retirement projects.
Yeah, right.
And now you have young sommeliers, young graduates, people with degrees starting in the wine industry in their 20s. And I started at that time when that was starting to happen. So I was very fortunate to do my first harvest at 21 years old. And it's very special to be able to say that I've been making wine for over half my life.
Man, you're very lucky. That's pretty darn cool. For our listeners who'd like to learn about your winery, how would they do that? Online.
Oh, so www.bergstromwines.com. We have a tasting room where we do really special seated tastings by appointment. We love, our little tasting room hosts about 15,000 visitors a year from around the world. And when you can come to the Willamette Valley and see our landscape, the wines just make so much sense. And that's a great opportunity for us to make that connection with people. So online is the best way to find us. And in the valley, come and see us. And a new project called Echelon, which is in the Dundee Hills. And that's a very elevated tasting experience, which will open this fall.
Excellent. This has been a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me to this event. I am very happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm here with Jillian Bradshaw, and she is the director. I'm going to actually let her say what her title is.
I am the director of consumer sales at Beaufrère Vineyard.
Now, I'm real curious about the name Beaufrère. Where did that come from?
Beaufrère refers to the original partnership between Michael Etzel, our founding owner, and his brother-in-law. The French idiom is Beaufrère, Robert Parker Jr. When they began the winery about 30 years ago, Robert was the original investor, and today we have a third partner with Champagne Henriot. And at this point, we're pretty much business as usual at our Wild Pirate ship. Essentially, we're making Pinot Noir, a little bit of Chardonnay, and trying to keep it all in the glass. There's not much else for us to brag about except for the wine.
The Wild Pirate ship. Now, you got to tell me about that.
Well, I'd say one of the defining features of Beaufrère is comes from the top, Michael Etzel being quite a playful, whimsical, eccentric, sentimental character. And I think that kind of makes its way down into the wine, and that might be why it's become known as a little bit different, sort of a thumb on the Willamette Valley. But we're trying to be friends with everyone and make sure we're accessible. Our tasting room is by appointment, but I'd say we're pretty agreeable and like to have people visit our little pig farm.
How long have you guys been in business as a winery?
Michael found the property in 1986 on a family vacation from Colorado Springs. He had three little boys in tow with his wife Jackie, and they planted the vineyard in 1988. And in the original idea, it was just to plant fruit and grow grapes and be farmers. A few years later, I believe in 1991, they brought on a third partner to build the winery. And the idea was to begin making wine so that it would be a viable business. And Michael's definitely made it that, but through real sweat and toil and a lot of laughter.
Oh, you guys are really pioneers here.
I would say we're second wave. We definitely look up to Dick Ponzi, especially, was a mentor to Michael Etzel, actually allowed Michael to work four harvests with him, and that's probably part of the inspiration for the winery becoming what it is today. Those founding wineries in the valley in the 70s definitely led into a strong foundation for the 80s, but yeah, we consider ourselves kind of second wave.
And you obviously have a tasting room?
We do. It's in our old pig barn. It's chilly and fairly rustic, but we get by because the wine tends to make people forgive us.
Well, it's all about the wine, right? For our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, what is your website?
Our website is www, like everybody's, beaufrere.com, and I'm going to spell it for you.
Please do.
It's BeauxFrees.com.
Yeah, the X is the curveball.
I know. And it invites all sorts of creative pronunciations, but Beaufrere is what we like.
I bet you it does. Jillian, this was fun meeting you. Thank you very much. You have a great sense of humor.
Thanks so much. It was fun speaking with you. Have a great day.
You too. I'm here with David Adelsheim.
Yes, you are.
I swallowed the S. You may have noticed that.
No, it's supposed to be with the first half.
Okay.
Adels.
Right. Adels. Heim.
Yes. Yeah. Flip-flottle style.
We're just going to talk about the name. We're not going to talk about why.
That's good. I think this has been one of the greatest interviews I've ever had to give.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I got to go now. Bye. So you are one of the pioneers of Oregon wine. And it's a real honor, by the way, to talk to you, because anybody who starts in the wine business has got to be half crazy and half genius, wouldn't you say?
Well, I'll go with the first half. Yeah, I'm not so sure about the second half. I mean, do remember it was the early 70s. And people were doing things mostly to piss off their parents, it was sort of a revolution in society. And baby boomers sort of did that, whether it was in computers or in food or in wine.
And that was really the birth of it all here, right?
Yeah.
What year would that have been?
Well, we started in 71 buying a piece of property, but we were the, I don't know, seventh or eighth vineyard planting and the eighth or ninth winery. But obviously we wouldn't know that there would be 900 plus wineries in Oregon and 700 plus in the Willamette Valley when we started. I mean, you just couldn't understand what our nominal and very modest success would bring.
Even funnier than that, when you say modest success, I mean, that was at a time when American wine wasn't even on the map.
That's correct. American fine wine really started to be put on the map in the 60s. It's not that there wasn't fine wine before, and there certainly were the BVs of the world and the Inglenooks and so forth, but the idea that America would make great wine trying to be at the level of the French, let's say, nobody would have had the guts to say something like that until Mondavi said it. And not that we were looking to Robert Mondavi to set our future for us, but it resonated, I think, with all of us, not just in Oregon, but all up and down the West Coast and probably beyond, that we should not be just trying to make money or just experimenting with grapevines. We should be trying to make great wine. And one of the great things about the Willamette Valley is that from the beginning, our focus was great wine. We knew that we had a cool climate. We knew that that limited what grape varieties we could plant. None of us had money, so we knew that we had to collaborate with each other, or we couldn't hope to ever achieve anything. And so all of that, though, was founded on this premise, or was based on this premise, that we were setting out to make great wine in a place that nobody had any knowledge of or any idea that you could do that.
I think what makes the difference in making wine is when you say you set out to make great wine. You weren't out to just make wine. You wanted to make great wine. That separates you from a different mentality.
Well, I think it did. And I think it's important to remember that because we were all sort of latent hippies, if you will, nobody set out to do this to make money. This was not an economic adventure. This was to make great wine. And that was really the underlying most important goal. And everything else was in service to that, the grape varieties we planted, the fact that we collaborated, the fact that we ended up being each other's best friends, in essence. That all was a result of sharing this vision that it was really about making great wine.
You know, this is my first trip to Oregon, and this has been a real pleasure as well as an eye.
Well, they finally lowered the visa requirements, so they're letting pretty much anybody in.
Thanks, David. You remember I could edit this and make you say
really?
Anything I want?
Really? God, this is very exciting.
No. But I mean, for me, this is great to be able to see this because I'm a fan of the wines, but I have forgotten where I was going with this question. It just sipped right out of my brain. Give me a second here.
Okay.
the idea of doing the auction, and it's a brave thing to go to this idea and start creating an auction. It's your third year. You got to feel really good about that.
Yeah. No, I think we had batted around the idea of doing a trade auction and knew that it could be successful theoretically. One of the questions that always had bothered me is when important people around the country and even beyond asked, well, when should we come to Oregon? And I couldn't really give them an answer other than a weather answer. Now we have this built-in answer. Mr. Retailer in Virginia, you should come for this auction because you get to meet everybody in the course of 2 days, everybody who's anybody, and you get to have a hell of a lot of fun. And it all goes to give money to marketing Willamette Valley wines and to make this even better.
And also to see a really beautiful part of the country.
And you can do that along the way. And it could you could have a storm of the century while it's going on.
Yes, like the wind outside today.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
David, you are fabulous to talk to. You've got such a great sense of humor and you radiate passion and life. I hope you guys do very well with this auction.
Thank you.
And I hope your wine does very well too.
Thank you. Very much. I appreciate the opportunity to chat today and would invite anybody who looks at this to come out and see for yourself if you haven't been here. It's actually a pretty fun place to be.
I agree. And one last question for our listeners. Your website, how would they find out about you?
Amazingly enough, it's adelsheim.com.
How did you come up with that idea?
I don't know. It just it was a one day we said, throw all the letters of the alphabet out and then take some out.
This has been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Ray.
Learn more by visiting WillametteWines.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.